This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. There are a couple of new and notable casualties among mortgage lenders earlier today. People's Choice Home Loan became the latest retail lender to file for bankruptcy. And yesterday, Major League Baseball's Texas Rangers changed the name of their ballpark, which will no longer be AmeriQuest Field. As more and more homebuyers default on their mortgages, loan companies like AmeriQuest and People's Choice struggle to survive in what's known as the subprime mortgage market, which means they specialize in loans to people with less than perfect credit. But there's another side to that coin. Hundreds of thousands of people who've lost their homes to foreclosure already, and many, many more who are now at risk. Later in the hour, we'll talk with Republican presidential candidate and former governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee. You can email your questions for him now at talk@npr.org. But first, the mortgage meltdown, and we want to hear from you. Are you struggling to make your house payments? Have you been foreclosed? Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we'll start with Jennifer Ordonez. She's a reporter with Newsweek magazine, has been writing about the floundering housing market. She joins us from NPR West in Culver City, California. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thanks for inviting me.
And during the run-up of the housing market, some worried about middle and upper-class people, or upper-middle-class people who were overextending themselves with McMansions, about people who bought houses and condos as investments, and about poorer people who could be described as subprime borrowers. Who's getting hurt now that the market is running down?
Everyone, at least a little bit. But I think it's the subprime borrowers that are really finding themselves in dire straits if they can't keep up with their payments, which many of them can't. Basically, they, were told, within the last year or two or three years, as mortgage lenders were, knocking down everybody's doors to give, offering people 100% purchase price loans with low interest rates to begin with. A lot of people were sort of basically told, don't worry, you can refinance later because the value of your house is going to go up. So if you've got a loan, say, that starts off fairly low with payments of, $1,500 mortgage, and suddenly you find yourself owing $3,000, you'll be able to handle it in a few years. Don't worry. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these people finding that their houses have not increased in value as the housing market has slowed down can't keep up with their payments.
And most of those are what you're describing, adjustable rate mortgages that start out low and after a couple of years can accelerate.
Yeah. Adjustable rate mortgages, for example, that, for the first 3 years would be, 5%, and then for the next 27 years could be, between 10 and 12% or something, a lot higher than mortgages typically taken out by people with better credit.
The fixed 30-year or 15-year mortgages that it's a fixed rate. It starts out a little higher, but it stays right there.
That's right. That's right. And so it's a real, a lot of the first-time buyers are less savvy about these things than somebody who has more experience, it's a lot of these subprime customers that are really getting hit now unexpectedly. I mean, subprimes, I think, make up between 13 and 20% of new mortgages nationally, depending on whose numbers you look at, and but their delinquency rates in like the fourth quarter of 2006, the last 3 months of last year, were 13.3%. So it's a real sort of disproportionate number of delinquencies that we're seeing from the subprime borrowers.
Mm-hmm. And there are a bunch of companies, not just the one we talked about today, that have gone declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy. What happens to people who have mortgages with these companies, places like AmeriQuest and People's Choice?
They have to keep making their payments, basically, is what happens. They're not going to be able to, they're not going to be able to refinance like they would have. They're not going to be able to get a new loan. And so, again, so many of these loans were sold on the promise of that you know, they're really in trouble, and it's going to be harder and harder for them to be able to get loans now that Wall Street is saying, wait a second, mm-hmm. we don't want to get into this business. I mean, you have Wall Street, which buys mortgages so it can package it into kind of mortgage-backed securities. And they're, you know, saying, wait a second, we're dumping these loans made in, 2006 because everybody's delinquent. And so in turn, it's triggering the failure of these loan companies. So it's really kind of a domino effect or a catch 22. You know, it's very circular, and it doesn't look like it's going to get any better anytime soon.
Well, if you have questions about how all this happened, or if you're in trouble yourself, if you've been foreclosed, give us a call, 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Email us talk@npr.org. And let's talk with Dina. Dina's calling us from Oklahoma.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I was incorrect. I told her that we were foreclosed on in February. It was actually in January, and the confirmation of that was supposed to be at the end of February.
Mm-hmm.
And we have since filed Chapter 13 bankruptcy in order to keep our home, and it has been our desire to make sure that all of our creditors get paid. But our interest rate was jumped up extremely high after a two-year adjustable rate mortgage. We were in the process of refinancing at that point in time, and we had a mortgage broker that strung us along for about 5 or 6 months, incredulously telling us that we could include the late payments in this new mortgage that he was promising, and it never came through. The servicing company that we were using refused to accept payments except in full plus, plus fees.
Plus interest and the late fees, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And so you've, what did you get, a letter in the mail saying, guess what, you have to leave your house?
Yeah, pretty much. Actually, we first thing I saw was a sheriff's notice in the paper selling our property to the public. And really, we didn't know what was going on or exactly when until one of my friends pointed out, Gia, you're famous, you're in the paper.
Oh, no.
And that's the first that we knew what was really happening.
And, well, hopefully the filing for Chapter 13 will get you out from under this, but it's got to have been a wrenching process, to say the very least.
Well, yes, it absolutely has. I just sent a son off to basic training at that point in time, and things were not real happy at home, and things have been really tight. But, yeah, it's been kind of miserable.
Jennifer Ordonez, is Dina's situation, from what you know, typical?
Increasingly so. I mean, I don't know the specifics of this this lender or broker that strung her along for 5 months, as she said. But, the best advice that people who have a subprime loan and now find themselves not able to afford their payments is try to talk to your bank. A lot of subprime loans have been sold to investors, and so the bank may need investor approval before making a deal. But, foreclosure is costly. Mm-hmm. And so, in many cases, banks are willing to work with people or kind of give them maybe a reprieve for a couple months. But I don't, it sounds like she was really sold a bill of goods by whoever, allowed her to kind of let this happen for 5 months or so.
Hmm. Yeah.
Dina, good luck to you.
Well, thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. Joining us now is Ellen Schlomer. She's Director of Research at the Center for Responsible Lending, a nonprofit research group in Durham, North Carolina. She's with us from a studio at member station WUNC in Durham, and it's nice to have you on the program today, too.
Hi, Neil.
And as you look at this, how bad is it? Is the rate of foreclosures as high as it was, during the last recession?
Actually, the rate of foreclosures is probably higher than it's ever been in modern history. We actually did a study that we issued at the end of 2006 that predicted that over the next couple of years, over 2 million homeowners will lose their homes to foreclosure in the subprime market. And that's roughly 1 in 5 people who got a loan in the last 2 years. And that's way higher than anything we've saw in the traditional mortgage market or anything we've seen actually since the Great Depression.
That's terrifying.
It is.
And what can be done about it?
Well, sort of two things, I guess. There's two approaches. First of all, you have to help the people that are in foreclosure, like Dina, who just was on the phone. Mm-hmm. And there really need to be remedies addressed to help those people. And, you know, when Hurricane Katrina hit, mortgage lenders and the federal government stepped up and figured out solutions to help people until they could get their financial footing underneath them. And we need that same kind of wide-scale solutions now. So that's one set of one issue. But the other issue is a lot of the abuses that took place in the subprime market that put people in danger are still out there, and people need to be protected from them. So we also need regulations and laws that will protect people that are going to be getting subprime loans in the future.
And also advice to be very cautious when you hear very seductive ads, interest rates lower than ever, and you can still get a great loan.
Yeah, you know, I think that people are a little bit skeptical when they hear commercials, but the mortgage transaction is very complex, and they really trust the person that they're talking to about getting a mortgage loan. And, you know, we'd like everyone to have all the information that they need to make great financial decisions, but it's really not a fair fight. And people rely on the loan officer or the mortgage broker to tell them what's a good deal. And a lot of times they are being sold a bill of goods.
Jennifer Ordonez, before we go to the break, I think it was just a couple of years ago, we had politicians trumpeting the fact that we've got the highest rate of American home ownership in history. And of course, that is something to be proud of. But now that it's turning around, don't those politicians have some obligation to help out, do you think?
At least a few have stepped up to the plate or are saying they will. I think it was Chris Dodd, Senator Chris Dodd of Connecticut, wants to, introduce legislation that would offer subprime buyers forbearance, so a little bit of a reprieve. And he's chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, so, you know, I think Representative Barney Frank could also wants to make it harder to get a subprime loan. So they're kind of now waking up to it.
We're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking more about the meltdown in the mortgage industry and the fallout for homeowners. Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or email us talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. With bankruptcies among lenders and home foreclosures on the rise, we're talking about the mortgage meltdown, which homeowners it hits the hardest, and how it affects you. Our guests are Jennifer Ordonez, a business writer for Newsweek, and Ellen Schlomer, director of research at the Center for Responsible Lending. We want to hear from you. If you're struggling to make mortgage payments or if you've been foreclosed, if you have questions about what all this is about, give us a call, 800-989-8255, or zap us an email, talk@npr.org. You can also read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And here's an email we have from Ryan. Would the guest please respond to the following question for myself and others dealing with upcoming balloon payments? Will it be any easier to refinance into a fixed rate? Ellen Schlomer, what's a balloon payment, and what's the answer to Ryan's question?
A balloon payment is actually a mortgage loan where you pay an artificially small amount on a monthly basis for a while, and then at the end of the certain period, the entire rest of the mortgage comes due. So you could end up owing, you know, $80,000, $100,000 at the end of the mortgage term. And, you know, most people can't afford that, obviously, to pay at one time. And I think, to be honest, the housing prices aren't going to be going up for a couple of years, so the likelihood of being able to refinance is pretty slim.
So these people are in trouble.
Yep, they're just added to that list of those 2 million households that are going to be in foreclosure over the next couple of years, unfortunately.
Let's see if we get a caller on the line. This is Robert. Robert with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. I was wondering sort of the scope of the subprime market. I've always heard it characterized as people that really didn't make enough money to pay their loans and people that had bad credit rating. In our area, Portland, there's been a lot of speculation with people, getting 100% loan-to-value loans and stated income loans, buying property with the expectation that it's going to, you know, increase in value, and almost not worrying whether or not they got enough rent to cover their mortgage payment, and not certainly not a mortgage payment that would balloon.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering, you know, how big is that part of the problem,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just homeowners that are actually living in their houses.
Jennifer Ordonez, do you want to try this?
I mean, I the question is, how big is the problem that it's too easy to get a loan for people that are now looking to? Is that
your question,
asking?
Robert?
Well, my question is really, I mean, I've heard about the fallout of people being foreclosed on individuals that live in their houses.
Uh-huh.
I'm curious what the expectation is that speculators are going to be foreclosed on, and that being a situation where they're much more willing to walk away from their debts.
So in other words, they bought properties with the idea that they would appreciate in value in a couple of years, might be able to flip them, or in any case, make rent profits from rent along the time. All right.
Yeah, exactly. And like for the condo market where they're bought before they're constructed and sold a couple times before the thing is even built.
Yeah, well, it's good when the market's going up. Jennifer Ordonez, is not so good when it's going down.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, I think in terms of... for example, new housing complexes. You know, there was a story in the LA Times this week, a great story that talked about Paris, California, which is a city in Riverside County that has a lot of very new housing complexes and housing tracts, and it's got one of the highest levels of defaults in the state. And, you know, these are people that that are either very newly in their homes, some, you know, a year, and they are already, receiving notices of default or getting these notices that it's going to be sold out from under them. So, you know, I think basically going forward, you're going to have these quote liar's loans is what critics call them, where you don't really have to show a pay stub or have to show any proof of consistent income. You're not going to see those happening anymore. I'm not sure to what extent, you know, pure investors, speculators are took part in the subprime loan market. Maybe Ellen could speak to that, but I think it's definitely standards are going to get a lot tighter.
Mm-hmm. Ellen?
Actually, the investor side of the market is pretty small, and most of the mortgage loans made in the subprime market are actually people refinancing loans. You know, it's been touted as subprime lending helps lots of people get into homes, but only about 10% of subprime loans that were made in the last couple of years went to first-time home buyers. The rest were people that owned homes many for several years who took out a new, like refinanced a current loan or moved into a new house and took a subprime loan for that. So we're really facing a situation where people who have oftentimes been in homes for a long period are losing them.
Thanks very much for the call, Robert. And Alan, if you would help us out, what's the definition of a subprime loan?
Kind of anything you want it to be, to be honest. It sort of depends on who you are and who you're talking to. But in general, subprime loans are loans made to people both with blemished credit or lower incomes or some other, I guess, sort of standard that they can't reach from a lender's underwriting criteria. And so it's sort of they don't reach the traditional, you know, this isn't our parents' mortgage market standard,
right.
I guess. And so for some reason, or either they don't want to disclose their income or they don't have steady income or they don't have a lot of assets or maybe they just have a lot of credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
They're classified as subprime.
So these were, again, if the market is going up, these are extremely helpful to people to, as you say, get a better house or get into a house in the first place.
Well, you know, I don't know that I agree with that. In the subprime industry, unless the market is really growing fast, those loans are very risky. And in Ohio and other states in the Midwest, we've always seen a very high level of subprime foreclosures. It's only in markets like California and on the East Coast where they've performed well. And so you can say they've helped some people, but they haven't helped the majority of people who've gotten a subprime loan.
Hmm. Let's see if we get another caller on the line. And this is Angela. Angela's with us from Philadelphia.
Hi.
I
have a couple of comments. I'm a real estate attorney in Philadelphia, and I don't deal with subprime very often, but I think this whole issue is going to affect the regular mortgage market, because in the past couple of years, I've seen people whose income does not support the home that they're buying. They'll get an adjustable rate mortgage and a second mortgage. They'll put very minimal money down expecting their house to appreciate. I've seen people with interest-only loans so that when they get into a situation where they have to sell, they won't have any equity in their home at all. And with the housing market, people have overpaid for their homes in the last few years. It's going to be an issue that affects everybody.
Jennifer Ordonez, do you think she's right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's going to affect homeowners in general, because the more houses that are on the market, you know, the harder it is to get a good price. It's already affecting Wall Street. You know, you look at New Century Financial Corp, which, you know, last week stopped making loans because its Wall Street lenders had cut off its financing, you know, and basically that triggered heavy selling in shares of many other mortgage lenders. And, you know, that continued all through last week. So there really is a ripple effect. This isn't just sort of the woes of the subprime, you know, the poor credit, low income subprime borrower. This affects all of us.
Angela, thanks very much, even if that is gloomy news.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Joanne in Kentucky. Due to divorce, poor health, and unemployment, I've ended up with a $132,000 30-year mortgage, $132,000 30-year mortgage. The payments are about $1,200 a month, and I pay about that per month toward other debt as well. Is there any way out? I cannot refinance again without a job. Ellen Schlomer?
I'm not aware of any way out of that. What I would suggest that Joanne do is contact local housing counselors. The Department of Housing and Urban Development works with a lot of local housing agencies, and they provide counseling. And I would suggest that Joanne go and talk to them and see what kind of alternatives there are. That sounds like a pretty grim picture, unfortunately.
Let's talk with Brenda. Brenda calling us from Boston.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have fallen into the same category, except for one thing. I never applied for a loan. Literally, I walked into my office one day, and one of my coworkers said that he thought that I might be interested in buying a house. So I laughed, and I said, it'll be very funny what kind of house I could get with my income. And he said, well, I have a friend who could do anything. And he told me I should give him a call, and I did. And turns out this guy told me I can get any mortgage that I wanted. And I asked him for a limit, and he said, whatever you want, I can get for you. So I went off looking for a house, but I really did not start off looking for a house until the idea was put to me. So I went off and I looked for a house, and I found one for about $395,000, and I asked him if that was suitable, and he said, anything you want. So I sent him all my documents, my pay slips, my stubs, my bank statements, my driver's license, and a job letter from my employer. And during the ensuing 2 or 3 months, I could never get from him how much this mortgage was going to be costing me. I also told him exactly how much I wanted to pay, and that I did not want to go beyond a certain amount for my premium mm-hmm. on a monthly basis. And he told me everything would be fine until the night before I closed. And the night before I closed, which was June 27th, 2005, he called me and he said my mortgage was going to be $2,400. And I said, I can't afford that because I only bring home $2,600. And he said, and so I asked him to get out of it, because at that point, he's the only person who could really decide that I wasn't qualified.
Right.
Eventually, however, he promised I would get something back at closing and he'd find me a better mortgage afterwards. So after that, when I kept after him, of course, he...
Right. I want to hear your story, Brenda, but eventually did you sign the papers and are you now committed for this?
Yeah, but the trouble is that when I complained to the bank told me that I had signed an application and they sent me a copy of it, and I never signed it, and it was not my signature. It was not my social security number. He overstated my assets. The whole application had been forged by this guy.
Oh, Jennifer Ordonez, doesn't this begin to sound like fraud here?
Well, it sounds like outright fraud. You know, I would dial your police or the FBI or something. I mean, there's got to be, you know, somewhere where you can go to at least get this investigated if what you say is mm-hmm. Is true.
And even if she should still find herself in trouble, at least make it more difficult for this person to inveigle other people into the same. Have you tried reaching the authorities, Brenda?
Let me tell you, I can give you a list of all the authorities I've written, including the Attorney General of Massachusetts, the Attorney General of California, which is where the bank is.
And we're sure that you've written to them all. Have you gotten any relief?
Not one bit. And in fact, when I complained to the bank that it was not my application, their solution is that I sell the house and pay them their money right away.
Well,
which is why I feel the bank was complicit in this, because they did not express shock. They're not going after the broker. They're not doing anything except they're giving me 4 months' grace to sell the house. Now, I'm not behind in my payments, but I'm certainly very much in debt.
Ellen Schlomer, briefly, is there anything that you think Brenda might be able to do?
I guess I would also encourage her to contact the state banking commissions. A lot of times they have regulation over brokers, and they may be able to do something as well. But, you know, this whole bait-and-switch story with a mortgage broker is something we hear over and over again. And people need to really start thinking about mortgage brokers like used car salesmen, because that's what they're basically trying to do, is sell somebody a deal, not necessarily the good deal.
Brenda, we wish you the best of luck. I know you're in an awful situation, but good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
We're talking about the mortgage meltdown with Jennifer Ordonez of Newsweek magazine and Ellen Schlomer, Director of Research at the Center for Responsible Lending. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get Susan on the line. Susan's with us from Dover in New Hampshire.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a property casualty insurance adjuster in the Northeast, and what I see is not just people's general ignorance about mortgage and lending practices, but I see a tremendous amount of just consumer ignorance of just owning a home. I see people who get into a home and think just because they have an insurance policy that should they have a loss, everything's covered. And I see people that purchase homes that supposedly a home inspector, which is largely an unregulated industry in most states, have signed off on heating and air conditioning systems that are clearly not the code, obviously not the code, just on visual inspection, but the houses are approved. And then I just see people, as the attorney, I believe, from Philadelphia commented, just people buying too much home. And then when they have a loss, even if it's covered, they can't even afford a $250 or $500 deductible. So my comment is basically, I think there needs to be some sort of consumer awareness on what it takes to purchase and own a home financially. And there seems to just be repeatedly a lot of ignorance in the consumer market about just owning a home.
Ellen Schlomer, based on what Susan's saying, yes, we're hearing about some reprehensible practices by some institutions and maybe some structural problems too, but nevertheless, people have to take responsibility for what they're doing.
Absolutely, and they need to have as much information to make the best financial decision they can, and they should be aware of those things about owning a home. And sometimes it's trial and error that teaches you that. And the main problem, though, is some of those problems, like buying a house with a bad furnace, cost you a couple thousand dollars, but getting a home with a bad mortgage can cost you, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. So we really kind of need to deal with, I think, the abuses in the mortgage market as much as helping consumers get educated.
Well, I see a lot of people who clearly are just buying too much home. You know, usually you adjust a claim, someone tells you what they do for a living or perhaps where they work. You have the valuation of a home because you have their declarations page. You certainly know what their home is insured to. And you just do the math, and you quickly realize that these people are in a situation where they're headed down a financial path that probably didn't have a lot to do with the mortgage company, but had more to do with the fact that they wanted to own a larger home that was well beyond their means.
Go ahead, Ellen.
I think that's a good point, and I think that there's, you know, everybody makes money in the mortgage deal, and you make more money if the home that someone sells is, you know, a bigger home or a bigger mortgage. And so one of the ways to sort of short circuit that problem is making sure that borrowers have the ability to repay their mortgages, which is sort of a standard that has fallen by the wayside in the subprime market. And so if lenders were required to ensure that borrowers could repay their mortgage, they have all the information. That would be a good start to protecting people from some of these problems and buying too much house.
Susan, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. And thanks to both of our guests, Jennifer Ordonez, who covers financial matters, a business writer for Newsweek magazine, with us today from the studios of NPR West. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Ellen Schlomer, who joined us today from the studios of member station WUNC in Durham, North Carolina. She's director of research at the Center for Responsible Lending there. Thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure, Neil.
When we come back from a short break, Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee joins us. If you have questions for the former governor of Arkansas about his campaign, his goals, or why he wants to be president, give us a call, 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.